Welcome to the ERMI podcast. I'm Joel Applebaum, the Chief Content Officer for ERMI and Captive.com. And on today's podcast, we welcome our distinguished guest, Mike McGlaris, who is the principal of Michael McGlaris & Company, an international insurance consulting firm specializing in alternative risk and captive insurance solutions for a variety of healthcare providers and other businesses. Mike is here to share his unique insights and perspectives as we delve into the topic of the captives and artificial intelligence, or AI revolution, and prepare for the future of information and insurance. So, Mike, welcome back to our podcast. I want to kick things off and have you share just a little bit about how you got started in the insurance industry and your journey into captive insurance.
Well, first of all, good morning, Joel. Nice to be with you again. I always enjoy these conversations very, very much. Thanks for the invitation. I don't think you want me to go that far back into my prior history, as I think that's sometime around the American Civil War. But I'm one of the, how shall I say it, elder statesmen of captives. I'd like to say that anyway, even if it's not true. But my journey in the captive insurance industry is now, I think, at its most exciting phase. Why? Because we're going to be seeing some of the technology revolution that we're reading about taking place literally within our eyes, within our own framework. We talk about tomorrow when we talk about artificial intelligence. Well, Joel, I think tomorrow has now been realized. We are in the middle of it. And a couple of points I want to make in today's podcast and my discussion with you, I hope will bear that truth out.
Yeah. Well, as we think about commercial insurance market in general, how do you see AI being used right now?
We see AI being used right now in the commercial insurance industry, which of course supports captives, right? Captive owners buy excess insurance and reinsurance through their captive organizations. But right now, underwriters tell me at the senior level in a number of insurance company organizations that they're using AI to navigate websites, to search for underwriting and exposure information. In other words, they get your application. The first thing they do, they check out your website. Mm-hmm. Why wouldn't they do that? Think about that. That's logical. And of course, what's on your website increasingly is going to be generated not only through AI, but through AI content. Underwriters also tell me that they're checking submissions against underwriting risk. In other words, your business or your particular captive reinsurance program may be part of a reinsurer's underwriting profile, may not. How do they know? They'll be using AI to plumb the depths of that discussion. I know for sure that a major international insurer, because I met with them just a few days ago, is using AI increasingly to interpret regulations and identify potential violations by insureds or where those violations may occur so that they can remanuscript policies to exclude certain things that they don't intend to cover. They're doing that. And of course, at a very practical level, Joel, claims adjustment is using currently predictive AI. I mean, dash cam videos of an auto accident right now, today, are being uploaded, and generative AI is being used to answer questions about the details of an accident, when it occurred, how it occurred, who may have been at fault. So AI is ingrained, and by that I mean predictive, not generative AI. AI is ingrained in the insurance underwriting process now in a big time way, and it's all flowing downhill, and it's starting in a big time way to affect captives.
Yeah, I see it happening too. I agree with you. And maybe moving closer to home, what's happening now with the use of AI in captives, and what do you see happening in the near future?
Yeah, captives are, let's remind our listeners, some of whom may be experienced and some who may not be terribly experienced with captives. Let's remind everyone that captives are at the service of their parent organizations, right? So at the end of the day, it is the parent organization, whether a publicly traded company, privately held company, a tax exempt, they create captives to manage their own risk, to enhance their own risk profile, to control premium expense, and most notably, to assist them in the adjustment of the claims process. Well, what happens to the parent happens to the captive. If a parent is utilizing AI in any part of its processes or procedures as a publicly traded or a private business, then the risks associated with that parent's usage increasingly now of generative AI, flow naturally down to the captive? And where does it affect the commercial insurance market when that parent, increasingly using AI and expecting its captive to respond, that captive expects the reinsurance market and the excess insurance market to respond to AI challenges as well? So captives are at the mercy of their parents, right? And at the end of the day, the increased use of AI at the parental level will yield a significant increase in AI usage by captives.
Yeah. So speaking specifically about the way captives manage risks like this as participants in their parents' organizations, risk financing or risk transfer programs, where do captives fit in as respects the use of AI?
I think they are fitting in and will continue to fit in as we migrate from predictive AI to generative AI. So let's quantify that for your listeners a little bit, and we'll use some simple terms that will help people distinguish between the two from an underwriting and risk management perspective. Predictive AI, what is it? It's the gathering of different data sorts and using algorithms to set those data sorts in a line that comes to a specific conclusion, right? Mm-hmm. It's the use of existing data. Generative AI is where all the crazy stuff is going on, and we know that, including all the chatbot stuff, and obviously the fake human beings that are delivering fake messages. It's really important for your listeners to know about Marsh's, that's Marsh, the big broker, Marsh McLennan, their 19th Global Risk Report, which was presented recently at the World Economic Forum. It was a stunner. It was an eye-opener, this 19th Global Risk Report, because they analyzed the top 10 risks facing the insurance, reinsurance, captive industry in over the next 2 years. And then they stretched that forward and took a look at the 10 years following, or the 8 years following that. As we think about global warming, as we think about the risks associated with global warming, and we've seen that on the property side, as we think about political upheaval, as we think about the war that is being now fought in Europe between Ukraine and Russia, all of those in one way or another made that top 10 risk list in the next 2 years from the Marsh Report. But what was number one? Misinformation and disinformation. It's generated by AI. The ability for me to have information in my systems as a parent organization that is wrong, that doesn't work, that doesn't have a body of science behind it, and I incorporate it into a process and procedure that my captive is in fact insuring. Or disinformation, that I fall prey in my business, I'm a parent of a captive, to disinformation that is deliberately being used to create anti-competitive pressure or to change a political system or the outcome of an election. Marsh, that report says misinformation and disinformation is the single biggest risk management crisis we face over the next 2 years. What does that mean? It means that captives insuring and reinsuring exposures will be increasingly subject and prey to it.
Yeah, absolutely. It makes me think about, especially in generative AI, how it's so powerful. It can help create, even for the dark part of it, right? Better cyber hacking or better cyber images and code. I mean, it's pretty powerful in the wrong hands. So,
and pretty scary as well.
Yeah, absolutely, right? So thinking about the captive marketplace, captive service providers, and in general, all those who serve the industry, where are we apt to feel the first real impacts of AI in captives?
I think we'll feel, all of us who serve captives, and remember, a captive is kind of like the hub of a wheel, Joel, right? The captive itself, the organization, the entity itself has no employees, generally speaking, single parents don't. And as a result, they outsource everything, accounting services, audit services, consulting services, brokerage services, captive management services in the domicile. Those are all independent service providers, right? We all know that in the industry. But it's important to point out that all those independent service providers are themselves subject to significant evolutionary processes in the use of AI. I was approached about a month and a half ago by an international captive publication asking me to do a 1,000-page article on a specific issue related to captives. And about a week later, the editor came to me and said, could you send me 8 or 10 good bullet points that would summarize the article you're going to write? And I said, sure, that's a natural thing for me to do. In about a week, I actually got the article back. I hadn't written it. It was written by generative AI.
Yeah.
Okay. That has an impact on me and my business. It has an impact on my reputation. It has an impact on whether people hire me to do a job or don't do a job. So the impact is going to be felt very acutely among service providers who are going to be increasingly enmeshed in dealing with AI, trying to absorb it into their cultures and infrastructure, and obviously trying to police the negative uses of AI, which may have an impact on how they serve captives themselves.
Yeah, interesting. Speaking of specifically, I guess, of healthcare, you know, that's, and I'm not talking about healthcare insurance necessarily, but more the coverage afforded through captives to healthcare providers, kind of your area, your wheelhouse. Can you cite some examples of where AI is being used right now on a predictive basis and where it will probably be used on a generative basis in the future?
Well, I think we should start with the fact that maybe I'll throw this out at you, Joel, and react to it, please. AI is about technology change at the end of the day. It's generated by and through machines, and we view it on machines, don't we? So machines are a part of the culture that we're talking about. I'll take your listeners back to 1975. An important occurrence happened. A famous Japanese anesthesiologist developed something called a pulse oximeter. It was a box. It was about 2 feet square, gray, unimpressive looking thing that had a digital readout like the old Casio watches did on your wrist 1,000 years ago. Remember those? There was a long cord. There was a long cord, and there was a plier-like device that was applied to the tip of your middle finger. What the pulse oximeter did was it checked your pulse rate. It was a way to monitor you when you were in surgery or having an outpatient surgical procedure or when you walked into a physician's office. I can recall forming an insurance company in 1983 where the debate in the room was what to charge for medical malpractice coverage for anesthesiologists who were using the pulse oximeter and those who weren't. And the discrepancy was profound, Joel. You use the pulse oximeter, you save lives, your premium is way down here. Your viewers can't see my hands, but they're below my desk level. And if you don't use the pulse oximeter, right, your premiums are way up there because you can't monitor your patients. What were the issues? The issues were a physician saying, I don't need some machine to replace me. I'm a skilled anesthesiologist. I know when my patient is crashing. Well, fast forward. The pulse oximeter is something you buy now for $19.95 at CVS or Walgreens. It's a small device now. It's about 2.5 inches long, right? You clip it on your finger. It shows your oxygenation rates, which anything above 94 is good, anything below that's bad, and it gives you your pulse. Typical example of how healthcare has utilized technology for the betterment of the underwriting process. Well, let's fast forward. Right now in the United States of America, the majority of the 968,000 members of the American Medical Association are insured by captives. Those captives have parents. By and large, they're tax-exempt hospital systems. What have they bought into? The use of the electronic medical record to track which physicians you've seen, to track drug interactions, to provide you with a roadmap when you present with symptoms that are unexpected, to get you to the right care source of treatment right away, the electronic medical record. Increasingly, what's happening with AI is AI is infused into the electronic medical record, technology infused in the electronic medical record that actually puts another healthcare professional in the room between you and your physician. If that physician tries to prescribe something that is contraindicated, given your health, your status, or potential drug interactions, the system actually freezes and forces that physician to acknowledge the potential of contraindication. It actually stops. And when the keystroke occurs, enabling right? The system to reopen again, that is a permanent part of the care record, including if the physician is sued. So we already have predictive AI inside the electronic medical record, helping to chart the course of our treatment and to follow it. It is, as I like to say, a second healthcare professional in the room who just happens to be unlicensed. Imagine in a situation a few years from now when your telemedicine visit, which you expect to be with a licensed professional, is actually with a bot. And that bot is actually conducting, analyzing, and in some cases potentially prescribing over the course of that telemedicine visit. Is that going to happen tomorrow? Heck no. But are there people already experimenting with the use of bots, with the use of ChatGPT to provide telehealth and telemedicine visits? Count on it. And so increasingly we'll move from that stream of algorithmic predictive AI analysis that stops the contraindication of medicine from flowing into your system to you, in fact, not having a discussion with a human being at all, depending upon the severity or the acuity of your particular case. Trust me, it's coming.
Yeah, it's very interesting. I was a chief analytics officer for a top five European insurer, so I kind of get it.
You've seen this one coming, Joel. You've seen
this one coming. Yeah, I mean, I have seen it coming. And actually, we're working on it even at ERMI. So, I know, contracts always a problem for whether it's a parent or a captive. And now the contract's going through artificial intelligence and pointing out red flags and contractual risk transfer. So it's just kind of like your doctor example, right? There's another person in the room saying, did you check this?
Absolutely.
Before you sign the contract, right? Raising Absolutely. Red flags, not the predictive type of analytics where it's likely that with this present and this present, this person is at risk for. It's saying, I've looked at all of this and this is a risk factor. Check it and make sure you can move forward. So with regard to AI and captives, just look a little further into your crystal ball and tell me, is there anything out there that scares you that our listeners maybe should be aware of or alternatively makes you feel really good about the future with AI?
Let's start with what makes me feel good. And I really think this is important because we try in our industry, Joel, to make sure we're examining both sides of the coin, right? What makes me feel really good is the day that I, having been in business almost 38 years now, consulting captives, the day that I don't have to manuscript a policy by printing two documents and putting side-by-side documents together to try to figure out how to manuscript coverage. The day that I can put a set of parameters into a system and have AI spit out endorsements that conform with policy language, trust me, I'll accept that pretty fast, okay? I'm feeling good about the predictive side of AI, but then I've always felt good about the predictive side of AI because it's freed up human beings to do what they do best, which is cogitate, think, reason, use their experience. Good predictive AI sets up stuff for us human beings to think about and consider, right? What really scares me about AI in the future are the risks that the captive insurance industry and the commercial insurance industry haven't anticipated. The risks associated with generative AI and the misinformation and disinformation that I spoke out a moment ago, all of that is going to enter the political risk arena. And I'm talking not about the future of elections necessarily, but the ability to sway people's minds into a course of action that results in activity that may in fact eventually be uninsurable. And I think the critical element is for the insurance and captive insurance industry to pay close attention and start thinking today, what coverage manuscripted needs do I need to prevent the assumption of unnecessary risk through generative AI? I would start that conversation this afternoon, to be honest with you, because it's going to unfold, as you know, within ERMI. You're paying close attention to it now over the course of the next couple of years. But Marsh's report is very clear. It's not the next 20 years where this is the problem. It's the next 2 years. That's the case. Those of us who consult with captive insurance companies, it's incumbent upon us to bring this to the attention of our parent organizations to make sure that we're anticipating coverage needs, coverage exclusions, and the possibility of significant harm to captives.
Yeah, I was reading Dr. Marcus Smallbeck's captive insurance company reports that Hermie produces, and it kind of mirrors exactly what you're saying. I think that's great so stuff. Wise.
That was great stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. Good advice here. So, well, with closing this podcast, I want to conclude today's episode, and I want to extend a special thank you to you, Mike McGlaris, for your sponsorship, your support, your commitment to our podcast is deeply appreciated. But our community's growth doesn't stop here at this podcast. If you've been inspired by our content and are looking for ways to contribute, considering sponsoring through captive.com, by becoming a sponsor, you're not only supporting our podcast, you're investing in a platform that amplifies voices and ideas that matter in our industry. Visit captive.com to learn more. Your support means the world to us, and together, we can continue to bring more amazing free content your way. So thanks for listening, and we can't wait to share our next episode with you.